Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland, leadership strategist, executive coach, and business consultant, working with organizations and individuals to turn their goals into actions. So my guest this week is Miss Amaya Attil. Amaya is a public leadership fellow and visiting graduate researcher at the Jean Zouave Foundation and McGill University, Montreal, Canada. Her work currently includes research on the explorations of concepts of leadership in culturally diverse societies. Prior to this, Amaya spent 5 years practicing as attorney at law, specialising in civil litigation human rights law in Antigua, where she actually sought to represent people from marginalised communities, specifically prisoners, victims of gender-based violence, and persons from the LGBTQ community. She's called to the Bar of England and Wales and Antigua. She obtained her Master's in Law with a specialisation in international law from the Georgetown University Law Centre as a Fulbright Scholar in 2013. As a youth leader, Amaya chaired a group of young professionals who organised and hosted the first ever youth-focused political debate between the new main political parties in Antigua, dubbed the National Youth Forum in 2014. Amaya continues to be passionate about highlighting and uplifting the voice of Antiguan youth and fostering youth civic engagement through her most recent hashtag Youth of Antigua series, which can be found on the NYF Antigua Facebook page and NYF Antigua on Instagram. Amaya was also the co-chair of the inaugural TEDx Antigua event held in June 2015. As an avid community service volunteer, Amaya served as the legal advisor to the HALO Foundation, Inc., a non-profit organisation spearheaded by the Governor-General of Antigua and Barbuda, Sir Rodney Williams, and his wife, Lady Williams. Amaya also served as Director of Youth Projects for the Rotary Club of Antigua from 2016 to 2017. Amaya was a Caribbean Canada Emerging Leaders Fellow, as well as an IMF World Bank Civil Society Fellow. Amaya intends to continue to represent Antigua to the best of her ability and push for positive, transformative change, specifically through advocating and working in the areas of youth engagement, social justice, and human rights. So this week, I am delighted to be joined by a rising star in my homeland of Antigua and Barbuda, Ms. Amaya Attil. Amaya, welcome to Phenomenal Woman.
Thank you. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, I would have done your bio, which I'm sure is more than abbreviated at the top of the show, at the top of the podcast. And you're a very, very busy lady. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and where you come from.
Sure. So I was born in Antigua. My parents are both Antiguan. My dad was actually born in England, but he moved to Antigua when he was 10. And he's been living there ever since. So I was born and raised in Antigua. I went to my primary school, St. Nicholas. I went to Christ the King for high school. Okay. I went to Scotland for boarding school for a little while. Came back to Antigua to finish high school. And then I went off to England to study everything that I studied. Okay. So my background is very rooted at home and in Antiguan grounding. So yeah, that's a little bit about, you know, where I come from and like my childhood.
But your accent is neither English, Scottish, Antiguan. So tell me about the accent.
So in addition to my formative years being in Antigua, I also traveled quite a lot and lived away. So I was in England for almost 8 years.
Okay.
I did bar school in England. I then went over to Jamaica to
do
conversion course to transfer from practice of law in England to the practice of law in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And then I moved to BC where I studied my master's, where I took my master's degree. And now I'm in Canada. So it's kind of been a hodgepodge of living away, traveling extensively, and To be fair, even though I sound like this and it seems like a neutral accent, my mom sounds the same as me. So, and she's never lived outside of Antigua. So I feel like it's just my mom, me channeling my
excellent,
mom.
Excellent.
So in a more neutral way. Maybe.
So an international, we'll call it international.
I suppose so. Yes.
So you obviously you studied law and you've practiced law. So what were your key motivators for your career choice?
So this is a discussion I keep having with young women, because there's all this pressure on young people to be able to know exactly what they want to do from early so they can get ahead of the game. They can get into university and study exactly what they need to do and then come out with career end game. And I had none of that. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And when I was doing my A-levels in England, I did a hodgepodge of law and politics and business and classics and history. And all of that, all of what I studied, I had a general interest in all, and I couldn't decide. And I figured law would be a really good combination of history, of politics, of business to come together to make one discipline. It was also kind of a natural fit for me, even though at the time I didn't really think about that consciously, in that I'm a very empathetic person. Yeah. So my choice to focus on and enjoy human rights as a practice as a field of study is something that I think is natural. That's kind of how I got into it. And I'm going to say this because I always say this. My dad, he wanted a girl right. child. One, he got one. Yeah. He wanted to name her Maya, and he wanted her to be a lawyer. And he got all three of those.
Oh, wow. Things. Okay.
I'm wondering how much of that is like expectation playing out in my life as well. So it might be a little bit, because I think both my parents also wanted to be lawyers. So
Okay. But it's a tough career choice, would you say?
Janice, you broke up a little bit.
No problem. But it all said and done, a tough career choice.
Absolutely.
In all the things.
Absolutely. But I feel like any career choice is, especially if you want to be really good at what you do.
Yeah.
And especially if you put a lot of emphasis on being excellent at it and learning as much as possible from it.
Yes.
I think any career choice is. And I think, to be quite fair with you, law as a study is not as difficult as people think. I'm going to say that. I honestly feel like I have seen what mathematicians study. I have seen what accountants do. I could never. So I feel like it's what works for you, right? So,
excellent.
To play into my strengths.
So now you're in Canada. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Canada right now.
So after 4 years of practicing law in Antigua, I needed a little bit of a break. Antigua is a very small society, and it can make you feel a little stagnant in some ways. And I felt like I wasn't progressing. I also felt a lot of pressure in Antigua to conform to certain expectations about personality, how you should present yourself.
Right.
If you're having a bad day, you can't show up at the larder to get a drink and be not okay. You always have to smile and put on this face. And it was frankly exhausting. So those two factors came together.
Yeah.
And I applied for this fellowship at McGill University. It's called a public leadership fellowship. And the purpose of it, how it began, the genesis, is the first ever woman Governor General of Canada. Mm-hmm. Her name is Jean Sauvé. She had an interest in hosting youth to engage in discussions that provided progressive solutions to different problems.
Right.
And she built this house in the middle of downtown Montreal that I'm in now. And every year, 12 people from around the world come together, live in this house together.
Okay.
And we're given a mandate to research. And this year it's the concept of inclusion in public leadership in culturally diverse societies.
Okay.
So it's exceedingly important in this day and age where you have Trump, where you have the swinging of the pendulum to the right in terms of immigration and culture and inclusion. So that is, I'm here now researching concepts within the purview of inclusion and public leadership. And I'm also, it's also a space for me to take a step back and breathe.
Yes.
Assess how I was feeling over the last 4 years about what I was doing, and then look forward as to what am I going to do next, and what does that look like? What is it that I actually love and enjoy, and how do I look for opportunities that encompass those things.
Right. So really, you're almost pivoting in your career. You're pivoting. Okay. So really, could you say that you're having a career pivot?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When I left Antigua in July, I proclaimed it as my leap of faith because this is something that I did not expect. When you study law, there's an expected end. You're going to be a lawyer, and that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And now it's been a lot of assessment as to, is law something I enjoy? Is the practice of law something I truly enjoy?
Yeah.
And is human rights the area that I really like?
Yeah.
And am I the person with the fortitude to be able to continue doing human rights work?
Right.
Because what I've discovered about myself is that being highly empathetic means that you can either be the type of empathy that understands and is able to act in a way that's productive, or you're the type of empathy that takes on as well as being productive, but takes on.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm the latter.
Yeah.
And I think that this space has given me a good time to reflect on that.
Yeah. And going back to what you said about having a particular face. Because, as you know, I had a relatively high profile role. And one of the things I found quite pressurizing, and people think it's very stupid, is the fact that you weren't allowed to switch off because there was an expectation that this is what you do, this is your role, this is how you should act, and you should be accessible at all times. You know, and people couldn't separate the individual from the job. You know, and so I totally empathize. So for me, it was like you, it's time to stop, breathe, even at 50, whatever years old, I want to talk about how old, but time to stop, breathe, and just reassess what needs to be done. And I think as women, we don't, like you said, there's an expectation for us to follow a particular career path. Once you've got into it, even now, I can see the judging. You know, the questions are: did she get fired from her role? You know, how could she be so crazy to leave a particular role? So there's all those judgments. So I applaud you for taking that step back and just say, look, this is for me. You know, we need to do far more. We need to do far more of that.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it's so much harder to do in a smaller society.
Yes.
It's so much because the comments are not just coming behind your back, but people ask you straight to your face.
Oh,
and it's like,
yes.
I don't even know who you are. So I don't feel comfortable answering that question. You sometimes just can't say those things. You can't be truly honest about setting your boundaries.
I
empathize with you. It's such a struggle.
So am I moving on? What has been the most satisfying challenge you've overcome?
Satisfying challenge. There's so many things I found satisfaction in over the years in what I've done. I think I'm going to speak on the personal because I feel like this podcast is a lot about being authentic.
Yes.
I think one of the biggest challenges is this transition out of practice into a lot of finding authenticity.
Yes.
And uncomfortable self-care, disruptive self-care. And I think the first semester from August until December, I was excessively selfish with my time.
Yes.
With how I would apply my thinking, whether I would apply my energy to something or not. And I think for me, that was the biggest hurdle because having to live up to expectations for so long.
Yes.
You lose track of yourself and who you are and what makes you tick. And I think the biggest obstacle for me was really assessing how I was feeling and recognizing I wasn't okay.
Yes.
And then being able to take the time for myself to pinpoint why and then addressing those.
Yes.
And I think above, professional challenges where you have a difficult court case or youth-led issues where you're addressing a particular problem in a way that you think is necessary, I think starting with self and really turning the mirror towards yourself, it's been incredibly rewarding for me. And also kind of disrupting these thoughts about self-care that we tend to conflate with capitalistic practices like bubble baths or, a good meal, although those things are completely necessary and help with self-care. But it's also about being mindful and gentle with yourself and being curious and attending to your own needs.
Yeah.
And I think this learning for me, I honestly have not felt more satisfaction with anything else within myself than beautiful. This time that I've been able to take.
Right. Because I think, again, that's as women, we don't understand the importance of self. And as you said, it's not about it doesn't necessarily have to be a bubble bath or a nice dinner. It's literally taking 5 minutes. One of the changes I made, definitely for me, was from the pressure, was that I have an unwritten rule that I know it may sound a bit, I'm not sure what the word is, but I don't work before 9 o'clock, and I have what I call the 4 R's in the morning. So that's either reading, writing, running, or riding my bike. So I take that time every morning to do two of those 4 things, and I'm rigid with it. You know, I won't take phone calls. Some social media, but you know, it's usually podcasts and I'm running or something like that. But I've taken that time to be really self, to say, look, I need this piece of time, this small amount of time, just to set me up for the day. The rest of the day you can do what you need to do, but I actually need to have that practice in the morning where that time is just for me. So ladies, if you're listening, it isn't about the bubble baths and the expensive dinners. It's about taking 5 minutes for yourself. Mm-hmm. Literally, and you know, and just to get that little breathing space.
It's definitely about that boundary setting. Yeah. You know, that's so important. But I think also I'm very mindful of the fact that I'm so privileged to be able to have this space where I can dedicate this time. Yeah. And I acknowledge that there are women out there who don't have that ability to take a minute to breathe because we have obligations that extend beyond the time that we have. You know, like kids that are growing up and need attending to, or 2 jobs, or, you know, difficult situations that they're grappling with that they can't escape from. So I recognize that.
Yeah.
So I always want to preface my journey by saying, by just reminding myself and others that I'm very privileged to be in this space.
Yeah. But just to add to that, and I appreciate that all the women have these challenges. I've been there. But the importance of that, the importance of that to a woman for their self-care for the rest of the family, because if you go down, the rest of the family go down.
Exactly.
So you do have to be a little selfish to recoup the benefit at the back end.
Absolutely.
So moving on, you come across a very confident young woman, but have there been times when you've been confronted by a challenge and it's gone horribly wrong? How did you cope and regain your confidence when you get these tough times?
I feel that's a very difficult question to answer. This is like asking almost like, when have you failed? And I have a mind. Okay. I'm actually encountering one now. So for the past 2 years, I have also been looking at jobs abroad.
Right.
I've been applying incessantly to different organizations that I think I would love to work for.
Yes.
And the challenge that has presented itself is that it's very hard to enter an international job market with island experience.
Yes.
Coming from a small island and not having this high level regional international experience.
Yeah. So yeah.
No matter how exceptional you are, there's a bottleneck in the system where they take those Cambridge Oxford students and or people who have high level UN experience.
Yeah.
And in order to get certain jobs, you have to have the experience you're looking for in order to get the job. And it's like, so this is a challenge I'm confronting now. And it is difficult because when you get those rejection letters, it plays on your self-worth. If your self-worth is attached to your accomplishments and the things that you get done and how you value those things.
Yeah.
So I think over the last couple of years, it's been kind of difficult for me because it's been every time a knock to my confidence a little bit. But in terms of coping, I have to remind myself that right now the global job market is very difficult for young people, and that this problem is not just about me. I keep having to remind myself of that. So my overcoming the challenge is to remain mindful, calm, and also hopeful and optimistic that something will fall through, because I have no doubt about it.
So what I'm hearing is basically just don't take it personally.
Don't take it personally. Easier said than done.
I can well empathize with that. So what has been your biggest career triumph?
So in law, one of my biggest cases, one of my most high profile cases, and also the most satisfying for me because of who it was. There was a member of the LGBTQ community in Antigua who had been brutalized by the police and slapped with erroneous charges.
Right.
And when this case first came up, a friend of mine gave me a call, told me to come and speak to this person because they wanted to take the case.
Right.
So I immediately said yes, and I was able to contact other lawyers who had more experience than I did in criminal law. Criminal law was exactly my field.
Yeah,
I kind of brought them together as much as I could, and we were able to defend this particular person from the charges that were slapped on them. And for me, when they were cleared of all charges, for me that was such an uplifting moment because it was not only a member of a marginalized community who needs the help.
Yeah.
We did the work pro bono because it's something we truly believed in. And three, I feel like, you know, there's often a precedent that's set about marginalized people not having access to justice in the same ways as people who have privilege and have money.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, it kind of shattered that precedent just a little bit in the smallest way. It's one case. It's one person. There are so many out there.
Yeah.
But seeing it firsthand and working on it firsthand was one of my personal favorite accomplishments in the legal sphere.
Right. So if you could go back, Amaya, and change one thing, what would it be and why?
What would it be? I think I wouldn't have spread myself so thin. But then again, how could I not? I was so invested in everything I did. I think about this a lot, actually, and I really don't have an answer because what I do and the things that I've gotten into, I'm 100% invested. So for me, saying I would go back and change something is difficult. However, okay, maybe one of the things I would change is I spoke to a lot of issues on the radio over the last couple of years. And I think I would love to go back and temper my opinions with maybe an understanding of other people's lived realities more than my gung-ho theoretical pie in the sky how things should be.
Yeah.
And I think that might be something I would do.
So what would you tell your teenage self? What advice are your teenage self now, knowing that?
I think if I were to see her right in front of me now, I think I would give her a lot of affirmation instead of telling her what not to be.
Yeah.
I think as young people, because of this atmosphere of expectation of how we have to be, how we have to present, how careful we have to be, how a lady does this and a woman does this.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I would encourage as much as possible the way that my teenage self was to love exactly how that person was and to not feel like I need to conform to whatever society expects of me.
Do you think that's still a strong that's what I'm looking for. Do you think that's still strong now? You know, people conform to society because you do see changes. I mean, I have a few years in you, as I said. So, so personally, I have seen change. So, do you think it's much easier now to be maybe a teenager now than it was maybe just for your generation? We think the same expectations are still there.
I'm going to be in a similar boat to you and say that I have no idea what that generation below me is feeling. And as much as I interact with young people, I have no clue what it is to live like and be like them. I think there are even a lot more pressure on them because of social media and the images that they're constantly seeing of perfection and wealth and this lifestyle that people put out there. They're like, why can't my life be like that? There are a lot different pressures around them. Which doesn't necessarily conform with the very traditional societal expectations that I think I was referring to. But I think those are still there.
Yeah.
But there's added pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all the get rich because nobody wants to wait for everything. It's instantaneous, you know, so everything has to happen. It has to happen now. I can't wait for it and I can't put the effort in to get it. I need to have it now.
And I also think that there's this lack of analyzing. How are these people living this life?
Yes.
Like, Yes. You don't know what they're sacrificing to be posting photos. In like the best dresses.
And I suppose it all goes back to that. I suppose it all goes back to value. It all goes back to values. You talked about affirmations, and you'd give your teenage self an affirmation. So share with us a success quote or mantra that you use and why it's meaningful for you.
There's one I have on my wall in front of me that I look at every day when I'm working. And it says, "The most important project is building the habits that my happiness and freedom require." And it's an everyday acknowledgement that the practice of setting your boundaries and finding what makes you happy is daily, but it's also necessary. So I think, that's one of the quotes. There's another one that says, "Most of your life is unpacking this." I can't remember how it goes. Unpacking the stuff that you were taught from people who haven't unpacked their own mess.
Okay.
And I feel like that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever my parents are dealing with in their lives as they were raising me is on me. And I have to unpack that while also unpacking how I feel.
Yeah.
And not just my parents, but whoever's around.
Yes.
So there's a lot of, the affirmations would come in the form of seeking truth in self.
Right.
Authenticity. Breaking out of those expectation barriers.
Excellent. Thank you. So has there been a book that's influenced you throughout your career?
Oh yeah. So many. There is All About Love.
Sound like a girl after my own heart.
Oh. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
There's All About Love by Bell Hooks, which is foundational to kind of my understanding of the practice of love and what love actually is. We tend to put romantic love at the top of this hierarchy instead of centering self.
Right.
And so that was really essential in shaping my views. Also, Frantz Fanon, Black Skin, White Masks, and Frantz Fanon, Wretched of the Earth. A lot of the work that I, or a lot of the things I'm exploring here come from and are steeped in my interest of race as and oppression and discussions around those issues and what that looks like, as well as defining my feminism as intersectional and what that means and what that looks like. So Frantz Fanon was kind of foundational, and Aimé Césaire. I think Frantz Fanon was Aimé Césaire's mentee those were foundational for me. What else has been foundational? There's so many. I'm drawing a blank because you've asked me. Like I'm under pressure, but I'll leave those three as my
excellent. So Amaya, if you could choose your own mentor, who would it be and why?
Michelle Obama.
Ah. Why am I not surprised? Why Michelle?
Unapologetically Black. From the South Side.
Yeah.
She was successful before Barack and her met. She knew it.
Yeah.
Was confident in that. She did her thing. She was well educated. But she has this sense of self that seems to me so strong and unshakable.
Yeah.
And less so about her professional pursuits, but more so about her personal attributes is what I would want to learn from her. How to stay balanced, because all of this practice that I'm doing about self is in a vacuum of space and time that I have free.
Right.
When I get back into that working world, how do I maintain that balance and authenticity and boundaries? And I feel like, I feel like there's such a wealth of knowledge from her that we didn't get to see enough of as she was first lady.
Very much. Yeah.
And I crave that. I crave that. But yeah, she would be it.
Great. So what are the three things you've learned about yourself during your career, Amaya?
The three things. I am, how do I put this? I am so relentless when I have an idea of what I want.
Right.
I'm absolutely relentless. So I've learned that I have that ability in me, that relentlessness leads to lack of balance.
Yeah.
That I am very vulnerable.
Okay.
I've learned that too, and that is okay.
It's very much
perfectly valid and a sign of strength.
Yes.
Because there's strength and vulnerability. There's very strength much. In acknowledging your vulnerability.
Yes, yes.
And also that I am human.
Yeah.
And I think that ties into the vulnerability. And, you know, I want to say things like I'm determined and confident and blah, 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 but I know all of those things. What I learned the most, I think, are those.
Yeah, yeah. So I would say you're a fan of Brené Brown then, and vulnerability, and her work on vulnerability.
Oh, yeah, Rising Strong, sure. Yes, for sure. I've watched her talks and I've read her books and I really enjoyed them. And I think, I remember her saying in the book Rising Strong that I read recently, where she was saying, you know, she was talking about vulnerability and she started to cry on stage or something. Yeah. And she was like, no, don't cry. Don't cry. What's wrong with you? And like all of these thoughts that were going through her head, but then she's the one that encourages other people to get out there and allow their vulnerabilities to show.
Yeah.
So there's that contradiction within ourselves, you know, but definitely. I love her writing.
So what would you say, Amaya, are your imperfections and how do you embrace them?
Imperfections?
Yeah.
Oh, I have so many. I think the strength can also be the imperfection. So like the relentlessness, like I need to learn when to let go.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Give it up.
Let go, Amaya. That's one. Two, I think and this is a New Year's resolution that I made. I have not made enough time for to harness meaningful and genuine connections with the people I care about.
Yeah.
I'm so busy off saving the world
that
I feel like I neglect the people that really matter to me in a way that maybe they don't understand how much they matter to me.
Right, right. So
that's definitely an imperfection of mine. Yeah. And three, I think, what is another imperfection? I have so many.
You're struggling, so it doesn't become that many.
No, but I'm trying to think of the ones that are more like, so another one is I think I have a lot of insecurities.
That's,
I have a lot of insecurities that I battle with, whether it be how I look or how I present. I'm very insecure about that. And again, as it draws back to everything, it comes with that box of expectation.
And I think I think people looking at you, me just having this conversation with you, that would come as surprising.
For sure. Oh yeah. Because you made a comment like you're really confident and I'm like, oh, am I?
Yeah. Perception is reality, dear.
That is true. Unfortunately, the last person I heard that statement was Ivanka Trump. So I'm really glad that you turned that over and turned it into Janice Sutherland.
There you go. Okay. So Maya, what's your definition of success?
Oh, for me, I'm struggling with that because at the moment my priority is finding a path forward career-wise.
Okay.
So for me, success in that field, in my professional aspect, would be me finding a job that gives me space to grow and learn, as well as giving me the opportunity to work in a field that I love.
So,
grow, learn, love. Personally, it would look like me being able to balance my love of work with a grounding in self care and the needs that I have in order to sustain myself. And as I move forward in age, because I just turned 30, so in my 20s, I can say that.
Oh dear, girl. Oh dear. Oh dear. Be 30 again. Or maybe not.
Since I turned 30, I started saying this thing in my 20s. You know, so like I'm gonna use it now. In my 20s, I didn't really think about a family and you know, marriage and like that. It's still not a priority for me, but I've started thinking about what I want and what that would look like for me. And that would also mean being able to balance a family life if I decide to have one with all of these other things in a way that is freeing.
Yeah.
And also just happy. Happiness.
Yeah.
And I think Marshall Montano said it best, and I quoted this in a speech that I gave one day. Happiness is the measure of success, he said in one of his songs.
Yes.
So, you know, if I can use any chance to quote Marshall Montano, there we are.
Yeah. And I'll for our international audience, what I'll do is I'll put a link to that track in the show notes. Yes, we need to educate the world, Amaya. Educate the world on Marshall.
About Soca. That's another favorite book of mine, Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes.
I was thinking about it. And for me, Marshall is an outlier.
Yeah.
Like, he's a huge outlier. He was doing this since he was young.
Yes.
So 10,000 hours, he had that long time.
Yeah.
He is an outlier. So that is my Caribbean example of one.
Excellent, excellent. So lastly, Amaya, what does it mean to you to be your own hero?
Oh, wow, what a question. What does it mean for me to be my own hero, to save myself or others?
Whatever definition you want to apply.
You know what? I think here is where I'm going to do a not shameless plug, but a plug.
Okay.
For me to be my own hero, I've been doing a lot of work with young people, and specifically in the area of encouraging civic engagement, and we held this debate in 2014 with the two political parties where youth got to ask questions. What we wanted to take away from was this partisan political culture where we're not talking about the issues, but we're talking about red till I'm dead or I bleed blue.
So
taking away from that. And I feel like, so the debate was not something that held a sustainable conversation.
Right.
What happened is that we had politicians on stage who still gave a lot of the rhetoric. Mudslinging.
Yeah.
Fast forward to now, I've been over the last 5 years talking with a lot of young people about these issues, and now we're doing this whole highlighting youth issues on our social media, which just started. It started last week, and we're so excited about it. And for me, the work that I'm doing here in encouraging young people to speak out and not be afraid. And one of the only things we ask when we're interviewing them and then submitting their piece is that they don't attack the government, because there can be victimization in small societies from a political level.
Yeah.
But encouraging youth to share their views and having other people see that young people are so clued in and so interested and have such a grasp on the issues.
Yeah.
This work, I think, is being my own hero.
Excellent.
Because for me, it's not only educating me, because I'm not the end goal.
Yeah.
It's hopefully cultivating a next generation, a wave of leaders who are willing to challenge the status quo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not just follow the examples of leadership that we see in on a political level.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think so this work for me is so dear to my heart, because I truly believe in the potential of Antiguans.
Yeah.
And I truly believe in the potential of Antiguan youth. And some of the things that they say at 19, I had no clue what this stuff was.
Yeah.
You know, so I see how smart, and they have to hustle because they don't have it easy.
Yeah.
And I, so this work is the work that I would consider being my own hero. Because I think it's not just about me, but it's about our progression as a nation. Yeah. So,
and I think that's highly important, because at the end of the day, whatever's being done now is laying the foundation for the youth coming up.
Yeah.
And it's important they recognize that, like you say, it's not the partisan piece. It's what is best for me as a youth, for me coming up, or for my next generation, because unfortunately, some of the young ones are having children very young. So, you know, so it has a double impact. So I think they need to look at that. So I think it's great work you're doing, Amaya. That was my last question. And I think, you know, dare I say, I was really looking forward to this conversation. Really looking forward to it, because I've watched you over the years, you know, little BDI, you know, and I've seen you progress, and it's a lovely thing to see. So I want you to keep on doing the good work. It'll happen. I feel it. I definitely feel it. That's my prediction there. My prediction. But if anybody wants to get in touch with Amaya or learn more about the work you're doing, how can they do that?
Sure. You could send me an email at Amaya, A-M-A-Y-A dot M, M as in Monday, dot Atil, A-T-H-I-L-L at gmail.com. Alternatively, if you're a young person below the age of 30 and above the age of 18 and you'd like to be
involved. You're wounding me, Amaya. You're wounding me.
If you'd like to participate in our Youth of Antigua project that we have ongoing, please send us an email to nyfantigua@gmail.com. Janice, whatever young people that you come across in, in your practice, I would love if you could, I'll send you the details via email. Excellent. And I'd love if we can collaborate in some.
Fantastic. Most definitely. Most definitely. Amaya, all that means to be saying is thank you so much for being my guest this week. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for this initiative and thank you for having me.
So how wonderful was that conversation with Amaya? She's definitely a young woman on the rise, so look out for her in future. And I wish her every success in her endeavours. Well, all that remains to be said, as ever, it's my pleasure to show up here every week and connect with like-minded women who want to live their life to its fullest and be empowered to take their career to the next level. I do hope you're inspired and enjoyed this edition of Phenomenal Woman. And if you like what you heard, please make sure you rate and review on iTunes, as that's how we get to share with all the phenomenal women that are out there. Also, make sure you share with all the phenomenal women that you know. You can connect with me via JaniceSutherland.com, and I'm on all social media platforms. So Facebook, it's I Am Janice Sutherland, and Twitter and Instagram, I'm The Real Talkist. Links are all in the show notes. So remember, you are the author of your own story. You control the narrative and you have the power to give your life story a happy ending. So own it. Until next time.